Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Most wonderful time of the year for Super J-Cast listeners, as we once again have a special festive treat. Who's that coming down the chimney? No, it's not Santa. Even better, it's the commentator for All Elite Wrestling's Saturday Collision and former voice of the English New Japan Pro Wrestling announce team, the great Kevin Kelly. Kevin, thank you for joining us once again.
My boys, it's a pleasure to be with you as always as I jam my fat ass down the chimney one more time.
Yeah, come on, Kev. That's not nice. You have a beautiful buttocks.
Oh, thank you for noticing. I appreciate that so much, Damon.
Of course, it is the festive season this year. Hopefully, Kevin, you're enjoying plenty of time with the family right now. I know that issue, you know, getting to spend more time with the family must have been a really big factor for you in your decision to call it a day with New Japan. So at what point did you make that call? Was there anything in particular that led to it? And how's the transition been for your family?
Well, it's been a change, just like going away frequently to Japan. I got done, so I started with New Japan back in 2015, and lo, those many years ago, it was, you know, both boys were home, and my youngest was third grade, and so missing a lot of the activities that especially the younger one was doing at that point was an issue. But then, so I start with AEW over the summer, and Tony and I had talked about, yeah, me continuing to go back and forth to Japan, and that was all figured in and no problem. And then was talking with my wife, and the decision was made that, you know, she really didn't want to be alone anymore, and let's figure out if we can do this and we can make a new life for ourselves together more frequently, because it's an adjustment. Like I said, just like being away, being together all the time can be difficult. So that's what we've been kind of getting used to, is me being underfoot a lot more, and home all the time, and me finding things to do, as I get used to this new schedule, and it just feeling weird for a lot of it. But it's all good. It really is. And now we're, you know, probably, what, 5-6 months into this arrangement. And it's been really good. But I am having a little FOMO, as, you know, as it comes to Wrestle Kingdom. And, you know, but I know that the decision was made for the best of reasons. And I'm just looking forward to this next chapter of my life. I'm having a blast with AEW. It's a lot of fun. It really is.
Yeah, that would be my next question. I mean, how are you finding it so far? What have been some of the biggest challenges moving over to AEW? How are the fans treating you? And I guess, what are the biggest differences between there and your work in New Japan?
Well, the whole difference is it's television. And that New Japan and New Japan World is live event coverage, but not television. And this is TV. And I had not done television, because even when I was doing Ring of Honor TV, it was live to tape. So, but not even live to tape. It was, we weren't doing a 60 minute TV show in 60 minutes. This is live. And as such, it's been a big adjustment for me. 23 years since I had done live TV. So it's having to say a lot in a very short period of time, being mindful of the commercial breaks, and as we call the, you know, as it's called, traffic, get the plugs in, get this read in, say this, say that. on the fly, doing a live TV show, and it's a lot. It really is a lot. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy I got Tony Schiavone with me now, because he takes some of that burden off of me. Fans have been mixed. I think they like me as a person. They don't think I'm doing very well, by and large. But I'm okay with that, because I'm adjusting to something new. And I think that some of the anti-AEW establishment that's out there kind of just finds something new to crow about. But everything's been fine as far as I'm concerned. All the feedback I've gotten from Tony Khan and from Mike Mansory and everybody in charge, and, you know, Schiavone and Nigel, it's like, no, everything's fine. Okay, cool. So, yeah.
What do you think you'll miss most from the time in New Japan? And I guess the other side of the coin, what are you happy to have leaving in the rearview mirror?
Well, it's funny. I was seeing Walker Stewart, stuffed in a seat today on his flight over to Japan. And that's the one thing I'm not going to miss, is that flight, those flights. But missing the boys and the venue and the staff and those types of things is going to be, that's going to stick with me. And I know that I'll get to see some of them here and there when they come over, because I'm sure we'll see them at AEW events throughout the year. But yeah, just like the guys like, you know, Marty Asami, when am I ever going to see him? I'm going to miss him. And the wonderful staff with the world team, I might see one or two of them, but these were people that I saw every day. And, you know, the staff who always greeted me with a very polite hello and a wave as I would walk in or leave, those are the people that I'm going to miss. And that's been the one thing that's like been kind of sticking with me is, oh man, I really miss those people. Right. And they couldn't be sweeter. And I never had an issue with working there or with New Japan, even the travel. It was just, it's just time. A lot of it boys had to do, and you guys know this, the whole product is undergoing kind of a seismic shift over the last couple of years. And I've told everybody's story. We're at the end of the Naito arc, and there are no other arcs that have yet to be completed. And I would have loved to have been there to call it, but it didn't work out. After this, it's all new stuff. And it's the time for me to step away and to let a new voice begin to tell those stories or jump into those stories at the midpoint and see them to conclusion. But right. But everything's finished from when I started until now.
Did you have a chance to? I know it's always hard and you don't know for sure, or I don't know, you tell me, was there a line in the sand that said, okay, this is it? Were you able to say a proper goodbye to everybody that you missed?
No, I was not. And that's, you know, one of the sad things about Wrestle Kingdom not working out, because that was my plan, was to say a proper goodbye. Chris Charlton kind of helped me in letting everybody know that I was, you know, going away. And he sent me a wonderful gift that was, you know, a token of his appreciation and a lot of the boys' appreciation. So that was very nice to receive that. But I have a, you know, I always will have a fondness for everybody. That's why I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing them all, you know, here and there very soon. And who knows, I might get the opportunity to go back for, you know, a one-shot deal here or there.
Right. So we're going to transition into this. And talking about a little bit more about the relationship between New Japan and AEW. And you're kind of like the bridge between that, it feels like, in the beginning anyway. So, look, you know as well as I do, there are a ton of New Japan fans that worry about this relationship with AEW and feeling the partnership is a little bit one-sided. And quite honestly, that New Japan might be better off without it. Well, what would you say to those fans that have those concerns?
Let's go back to Ring of Honor. Boy, did Ring of Honor take it in the shorts quite a bit when it came to the relationship with New Japan and ROH. And a lot of people said that ROH would be better off without the without dealing with New Japan, coming over once, twice a year, beating all of our top guys. Only a couple of guys getting opportunities to work over there. And what's the point? Well, the benefit was is that it helped. It helped the business grow. And New Japan now is in a position, and I think is in a state of their business where they are, I don't know, it's hard to say. Are they sellers instead of buyers? Are they not concerned about losing talent because they feel that they have enough homegrown talent that they're going to rely on for the next 10 to 20 years? I would think that more of, you know, that we, there are luxuries that we cannot afford anymore, like Will Ospreay. And we want those guys to go and move on and be happy and be with AEW, who we can control and work with, you know, control in terms of our relationship with them and have them if we need them, by and large. And as opposed to WWE, which would be more of a shut door as opposed to just a forbidden door. And I don't know. I think it's good. And I know certainly AEW benefits from it. But I think that AEW could do more to tell the stories better, of explaining who Kazuchika Okada is, why Tanahashi means so much, who is Tetsuya Naito, what's Sonata all about. When they do see them, you know, it's easier to tell the Ospreay story because he can help tell it. But I agree that there are, I think that justifiably so, some people are kind of raising an eyebrow, like, how's this working out? But it'll be okay. Everything will be fine in the end.
So you mentioned Kazuchika Okada there, Kevin. Obviously, we have a lot of rumors circulating that he is speaking with Barry Bloom and his contract is expiring shortly. What do you think the future holds for him in 2024? And if New Japan isn't an option, do you think NJPW's public perception will take a hit with this and Jay White and Will Ospreay's departure?
Well, yeah, I think it would. I think it would take a hit. We have to look back. What was that? 2016, 2015, where we lost Shinsuke and AJ Styles, and you know, Gallows and Anderson, kind of one fell swoop. Obviously, Shinsuke was the biggest hit to New Japan, and I think those reverberations are still being felt to this day. I think some people, some fans, never got over it. excuse me, but obviously Okada can write his own ticket anywhere he wants to go, and that means Japan as well. He's becoming a big TV star over there because he's doing a lot more stuff outside of wrestling, and of course his wife is a very famous voice actress, and I think that as Okada becomes more well-known and more well-versed in television and hosting programs and doing different things, that's going to open up a significant amount of business for him. Togi Makabe, from all of my time there, was doing a dessert eating show where he was Sweets Makabe, and it was said to be on more than one occasion that as great as Togi Makabe has been for New Japan Pro Wrestling, he is infinitely more popular to the dessert-eating, television-watching crowd who only knows him from that and has no idea that he, Togi Makabe, is a professional wrestler and a former IWGP champion. So I think that...
What a life.
it puts wrestling, and it puts New Japan Pro Wrestling, even in Japan, in a bit of a box, in that if guys can find success outside of the industry, then okay. Then New Japan sort of benefits from having them close by, but there'll be times where Okada may be off doing a show or a movie or who knows. And if he decides to come to AEW and wrestle, would that allow him to still do New Japan, to allow him to still become an actor if he wanted to be? I'm sure yes. I would say that there are a lot of options open for Okada. We do run across this every year because these contracts are the renegotiation is on the raise. You're guaranteed to work. Once you have a contract in Japan, you'll always have a contract until you or both sides say, I really don't want to be under contract anymore. And salaries go up. And the more that you are doing well and business is up, then there'll be a raise for you. And then it's just agreeing on the percentage of the raise. And why do some guys leave as they get older? Well, because they're not making as much money and they're getting less and less each year. Now they have a job, but they might be getting paid less. Yeah. That's just the way it goes. It's a different formula than in the US or other countries. You will be paid based upon what your perception is, what the perception of you is, your value, your worth, and it goes up while you're making money, and then it comes down, but you always have a job.
Right. And if the words are true, and like I said, we wouldn't be talking about this if Joel and I didn't firmly believe it is true. If you contact a gentleman like Mr. Bloom, you're looking for the bag, right? I mean,
well, sure.
Do you think there's a possibility of even negotiating, using an offer and then negotiating back with Bushiroad? Or do you think, hey, you know what? If he's talking to this gentleman, we're probably going to see him in the States.
That's a good question. I can't think of an example where Mr. Barry has been used as a lever to get more out of New Japan. I think it could be seeing what is out there and seeing what the bag, how big the bag could be. I know Mr. Barry is not taking on a lot of new clients nowadays as he's gotten up there, and he's still a wonderful gentleman. He's fantastic. So if he is indeed being represented by Barry Bloom, then Kazuchika Okada is doing all right for himself, and there's a great deal of value around him for Mr. Barry to go out of his way to take on a new client when he's not really doing that for anyone else. He's, like I said, either way it works out, guys, he's going to be fine. He's right. Either going to be making a lot of money in New Japan or a whole hell of a lot more in America for AEW. Taxes and those types of things and the value of the yen. It's an interesting, and I'm not quite sure how this works out. So he gets paid in yen. And the yen right now is at historic lows. So he's getting paid. He's making less, even though he's making more. Because the yen has less value. So is this the time to make the move? Look at the way, you know, Otani's deal is structured. Being paid in U.S. dollars, but in a low tax or in a high tax state, he wants to be paid in a scenario. So that's why they deferred all the money. And, you know, he's getting $680 million deferred.
Right.
There is, and also, I think there is a part of that Otani factor, the number one star in Japan in all of sports is Otani. And he just got a record-setting contract, doubling, you know, the previous high, or at least close to doubling. And I think that Okada is in that same conversation with Otani. Should Okada be the highest-paid star in pro wrestling? I think yes. I don't know what the highest-paid – I don't know who the highest-paid star in wrestling is now, and I have no idea what that dollar figure is. But whoever is making the most, Okada should at least make one more dollar than him.
You know it. The closest thing we'll get to a baseball podcast with you, Kevin. I know I'm scratching that itch for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem.
But I think that the economics right now with Japan are a little bit of an issue because guys were getting paid in yen, the foreign wrestlers. So the wrestlers from the United States were getting paid in yen and then those yen converting to dollars. And because the yen's value to the dollar is less, they were getting a decrease in pay, less than their guarantee. So they had to adjust it, you know, and that's just one of the realities that's out there now.
Well, sticking with the U.S. for a moment, you were front and center when New Japan was first dipping their toes into the U.S. expansion. Obviously, it's not gone exactly the way the company might have hoped. What do you think the biggest problems were and what are your thoughts on the long-term future Western landscape for New Japan?
I think the biggest problem has been not understanding how to promote in the U.S. market and not understanding and undervaluing the power of television and not securing television and not having a a television show that is easily promotable and easily digestible by the audience. Staffing in Japan is, they run very
looks
lean.
Looks like we may have lost them.
No. Oh, I'm back.
Hopefully
I'll be
we'll
back.
Get a signal back from Kevin.
I'll be back
there
in a
go.
Second.
There you go, we got you.
The idea of
I think Kevin's
staffing,
driving through the Lehigh Tunnel.
Yeah, I'm on Route 15, and there's a little spot where there's no cell service, but it comes right back. And when you're with the world team, they've only got so many people working there, and having to, you know, produce a second television show that would then be exclusive to the U.S., that's a lot of work. And where is it going to air, and how much is it going to cost for us to get on these different markets, and are we able to secure a cable deal beyond, well, we've got Access TV. Okay, Access TV is smaller in relation, and how would we get to a CBS or an ESPN or a Disney? Well, a lot of those deals were already secured up. Okay, now what do we do? Do we go market by market and, you know, just buy ad time in the markets that we're coming to? Yeah, that costs a lot of money. And how much do they want to spend? How much do they want to spend to promote, grow the U.S.? I never was told what the game plan was. I never was told because they weren't conferring with me on these decisions. I certainly have a point of view, and I have some opinions on it. I've got a little bit of experience across the industry. I don't know if you guys know this. I've been in the industry over 30 years. But the...
You heard, yeah.
Yeah, the idea of not understanding, could I go and promote a wrestling show in another country? Hell no. I wouldn't know anything about it. Well, right. who's coming to work in that office? If I wanted to promote Russian championship wrestling, the first thing I would do is hire some Russians and have them do it. Because I don't know anything about anything with that market. I might be able to speak the language, but I wouldn't know anything about how to do business there. And that I think is inevitably what the biggest issue is for New Japan's expansion into America. Hello?
Joel? Yep, we got you. No, I'm sorry. We just had a little rumbling. Listen, as U.S., it seems like it hasn't been what we all hoped it would. And then along with that, we also hear rumblings of maybe tension or maybe disagreement. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is between Bushiroad, Kidani side of the business, and the actual office. Is that anything that you noticed from your time there?
No, that is not anything that I have noticed from when I was there. I'm sure that there are opinions about the way things are run. You know, when Harold May was in charge, he didn't understand the value of having bad guys. People don't like them, right?
Wow.
Well, no, they boo them. Well, why would we have bad guys then? And he had to be told, listen, this is the reason why you have bad guys. He still didn't get it, but he was at least told, this is the reason why you have bad guy wrestlers, and this is the reason why you have good guy wrestlers. He didn't understand it from a business perspective. Why would you have somebody that's not marketable, that's not likable, that doesn't sell merch, that doesn't, well, to have good, you must have, to have good, you must have bad.
Right.
Listen, every executive comes into wrestling, whether they think it's all ha ha and, oh, this is easy, or they come in like with definite points of view about what to change. Or if they come in going, I don't know anything about this, leave it up to the wrestling people. I think that there's always going to be some of that push and pull. But I never heard like, oh man, Kidani's on the warpath today because he's angry about A, B, or C. Every time I saw him, he was super nice and there was never any tension around anybody.
So you mentioned Harold May there. So seeing what you've seen then, know what you know now. Do you think the Harold Michael Craven reign was good or bad for New Japan?
Well, you look at, you know, the pros and cons of the Harold May era. There are, you know, pros, tough to say. Obviously, I think we can all agree that editor Dan got a lot more publicity than he previously had gotten and very well deserved.
I used to know him a beer.
Big moment in time.
Yeah. He got a big head over that, you know. He thought he was a big deal.
Everybody changes with a little bit of publicity. He just wanted a light. That was it. And now, you know, but obviously where the business has gone, and I think that certainly the job that was done by Obari during, you know, the pandemic, I think says probably, you know, the less said, the better about the previous boss and focusing all of our attention and love on the current boss who's done a great job.
Now, I just want to ask you about your work in the commentary booth. I mean, we've had a lot of guys coming and going in recent years. We've had Gino Gambino coming in, which hasn't worked out long term. Now we've got Walker Stewart taking the reins. What do you think are the ingredients needed to be a successful commentator, specifically for New Japan?
Well, how dare you, first of all, for insulting Gino. Gino's role with the company is economic. Let's be fair. The guy deserved to be paid, and they didn't, you know, they didn't see the value in having a second on a contract and paying him a fair wage. So he's doing his own thing. He works in law enforcement in Australia, and
wow,
and that's what he's doing. He's there for, he's going to come back here and there going forward. But, he's got a real job.
Commentators get paid.
Well, yes. And that was the surprise when Gino would receive, what we thought was a pittance, and he would run at us wanting to hug and kiss. And it's like, why? What's wrong? Thank you so much, Mr. Kevin, for the generous money you've given me. I thought it was, not enough, but he was a good boy. Now Walker Stewart. I needed somebody that could go and basically live there if necessary, because I don't know what the economics of – we need to have English commentary. We need to have English commentary all the time. And the more available an English commentator is, the better. And if I'm flying back and forth because I still have to do AEW, then I wouldn't be effective for New Japan. That was one of the reasons, too. It wasn't just me wanting to stay home more. It was who's best to serve our customer base. And that's somebody new. And that's somebody who's very young, who doesn't own a house, who's not married and doesn't have kids, who can learn with the product and roll with the punches. And because he's young and dumb, we can pay him a little bit of money. And I don't need anybody smartening him up before he figures it out. Hopefully we'll get some good work out of him.
Always the hustler. My Lord, Kevin.
Don't smarten him up, Damon. Whatever you guys do, don't smarten that kid up. He'll kill his gimmick.
Oh, Lordy Lou.
Lots of young talent, both on the commentary booth and also in the ring. So my next question is going to be, how do you feel about the way the company has handled the younger talent this year? You know, guys like the Ray or Three Musketeers. Because it kind of feels like the booking completely changed from the first half of the year to the second half. And so can you speak on that a little bit, please? And if you were in charge, what would you change? Whom would you be pushing in 2024?
I mean, if you look at, you can't have the second half of the year without the first half of the year. I think you have to have, you put everybody out there and you see what you have and you evaluate and you make adjustments going forward. I think that, and I don't know what the plan was coming in, nor do I know what adjustments were made at a midway point. I felt like it was a lost opportunity to have them all jammed up in one block of the G1. And me personally, I'm not a fan of the four blocks, but if we have four blocks in a G1 tournament, then by all means, let's spread them out and let everybody get to see them instead of them just fighting each other. But them fighting each other is what made the stories in the second half of the year, which is kind of the point of the G1, which set the stage for everything going forward into 24. So I've learned never to question the long-term booking of New Japan Pro Wrestling, because inevitably and invariably it works out. So I know that the talent is in abundance. I think you throw Oiwa in there as well, and even Kaito Kiyomiya. Let's throw him in the mix. All five are different. And I think that there's been very few times. It is like getting five number one draft picks. And how do you find playing time for all of them? How do you distribute the ball? And how do we make sure that each of them is getting what they need? It's very difficult, but it has given New Japan the opportunity to have a wide array of new talent come forward at exactly the right time as the Naito story comes to an end. And really the end of the 20th century now it begins post Wrestle Kingdom here in 2024.
Right. Now we alerted the troops that you were going to come on, Kevin. And they jumped at the bit to ask some questions. So one question from Nicole, who is always is there for us when we need her in a pinch, Booze Leprechaun on Twitter. She questions, you've been critical of Noah, and particularly Kiyomiya, in the past. What, give him a piece of career advice. What's one piece of career advice you'd give that gentleman?
Polish up your resume. Find another employer. For God's sakes. But, I don't blame Noah. I don't blame Noah at all. I just think that they have wasted the last 3 or 4 years on the Muto retirement tour, and the product has suffered, and the young talent has suffered. They're not growing. They're not getting any better. They're not developing any new young talent. And the one good piece of young talent that they do have is being frittered away by them, and that's Kaito Kiyomiya. I think that Kiyomiya has all the things that you would want of being a star, but let's face it, he got blown out by Okada. They beat the doors off of him in the G1, and he was the least marketable of the five new guys coming out of the end of 24, or coming out of the end of this year. Who the hell's talking about him? I mean, they're talking about him in the Noah universe, but in terms of future success, it's, Oiwa, oh yeah, and Kiyomiya too. That's not to say that he can't become a reclamation project. I think Kaito Kiyomiya needs to go away and come back and be a bigger star. He could benefit from an excursion to America more than anybody. 27 years old, going on 28. Kid's English is decent. He's a great kid. Fantastic athlete. But my God, and I think they've done not irreparable harm, but they certainly haven't been mindful of the assets that they have. And maybe they just see him differently. Maybe they don't see the big main event star, the Wrestle Kingdom level star that some people that are fans of wrestling have seen before. Right. But you can't say that. You look back, okay, microcosm of everything. G1 match at Ota versus Gabe Kidd. Gabe Kidd was the star.
Right.
And that was supposed to be 50-50 double countout? I'm sorry. Gabe Kidd came out looking, acres better than Kiyomiya did in just that one match. And that tournament was the whole story of that tournament, was Gabe Kidd. Who the hell is he? Oh, he's from Nottingham, and he's in the dojo and he's good and whatever.
He's a fucking madman,
He's a hooligan, is what he.
He's a madman. And he came out a bigger star than Kiyomiya did.
So with that being said, though, what do you think of this Wrestle Kingdom card and the chatter around the fans of this product about the likes of guys like a Tama Tonga and a David Finlay and a Sonata? Do you think that they've been given the best spots to the right people?
I think that the spots and the people are equal. The buzz is not buzzable this year, Damon.
I've said that.
it is what it is. And, Sonata's flat as a pancake as champ. And everybody's hoping that all hope that Naito wins and gets his celebration. Then what? Well, then certainly the Sonata era is over and we can move on to whatever's next. It's turning back the clock to pre-pandemic. Naito wins, beats, sets up the match with Hiromu, then the world stops. Are we just going to pick up from there and go back to what was supposed to happen in 2020 and tell that story now with Tetsuya Naito? I don't know. But Sonata ain't the answer. David Finley gets it. He understands it. He's physically the athlete that he needs to be. If he was 6 inches taller, he would be awesome. I think there's a little bit of a perception issue. The looking like Jay White didn't help him at all. Did look like Jay White Jr. But Finley has been, you know, dug in his heels that he's just going to do everything he can to get over in that spot, in that role, and understands the limitations and understands the problems that are, you know, that come with it. I had no problem with Tama. I think Tama's done great. Tama's exactly what you want in an exciting, you know, flashy babyface, likable. And there probably is, oh, well, we wanted to see some of the new guys in there. Well, they didn't have the year that Tama did. They didn't have the G1 that Tama did. They didn't have the quality of matches that Tama did. And I'm sorry, take all the matches with Will Ospreay out. If you have a good match with Will Ospreay, that's because you wrestled Will Ospreay.
It doesn't count. It doesn't
right.
count.
Right. It doesn't count. So everybody's like, oh, Tsuji, oh, you know, Shota. Of course, they're going to be great. But don't bank on the fact that they had great matches with Will Ospreay is the reason why they should have more at this Wrestle Kingdom. I think that the Great O'Khan is a tremendous disappointment. I love him. I think he's an intriguing character. But I don't think that they had mid-card half-comedy guy when they plugged him into this spot. So I think he's done disservice to himself. And I think that, again, that's part of the reason. Some of the low moments of the year have been involving him. I would have liked to have seen more out of him, but he has... Remember after the match with Tanahashi a few years ago, that singles match at the Dome? And everybody's like, oh my God, this is the first of many. Well, he couldn't be any further away from big moments at the Dome than he is right now.
Right. In the hobby... It's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Think about that. Is there anyone not on the Wrestle Kingdom card who you think deserves to be there based on their output this year, where you think New Japan have maybe missed a trick by not giving them a match?
Well, I mean, does Hanare count?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Because, I mean, he's obviously going to be involved somehow. But yeah, he deserved to be in that spot. You could have made the argument if you put, you know, if you would have done a three-way with Shingo, and I know we hate three-ways. If you could have taken Tom out of that spot and had Hanare in, that's an argument I think that's worth having. Hanare had a fantastic year, and you can't take away the effort that he put forth and the improvement. Oh my God, the improvement! He should just write a check, you know, however much, what, 10, 15, 20% of his money, and just, dear, here, Shingo Takagi, here you go. Here's a big portion of my check, because he deserves it. He got that guy right. And, man, just, I'm so impressed with him. I don't know, the idea of, and I never want to say, oh, juniors deserve more. Juniors, yeah, they get what they get. I think that some of the more intriguing pieces going forward will be, you know, the foreigners in the junior division and the homegrown pieces in the heavyweight division. Kevin Knight certainly is going to have a huge year. I'd be interested to see what Kushida's role is now that he's working more with TNA. But I think that there's some interest there. Obviously, LP and Hikuleo are going to be fantastic, and that match is going to be this is such a great vehicle to get Hikuleo over. By the way, guys, this is priming him for greatness that I've always said is there. I've always called it. And this is, he's just learning how to do what he needs to do to be successful in this industry. And Phantasmo is a perfect partner for this, getting him to rely on his personality more and a little different than what we had seen from the, you know, Tongan family. Here's the way we do wrestling. But realizing that in order to be that crossover, that star, that physical imposing, yes, but also charismatic, heart, you know, intriguing babyface or dastardly heel, whatever the role is, this is going to get him right for that for the future. So yeah, I don't see a lot of people that are like missing out. I think that Wrestle Kingdom spots should be cherished and not passed around like candy on Halloween.
Now, someone you touched on was the guy at the top of the card, Sanada, the world champion. And much has been made about his going on 9-month IWGP world title reign. Where would you rank him when it comes to former champions? And do you think the criticism from fans and media is justified?
What did you expect from a Sanada title reign? And did he do exactly what we thought he would do? This is the Sanada that we've always seen. I didn't expect him to be new, better, or different. And he hasn't been. He's been the same middling guy that he's always been. And will go in as an underdog at Wrestle Kingdom, both, you know, kind of physically and emotionally, to Wrestle Kingdom. I think people would be happy, small h, if he wins, but they'll be happier if Naito wins, as we get to see the end of that story. It's a tough spot for him because he's not Naito and he's not one of the new guys. He's been here, you know, since 16, and he finally got there and everybody went, yay, he got there. And then it's like, okay, yeah, we'll see. And he had a G1 that was good. It was, you know, unfortunately he got hurt. That affected him. But he went through and he won his matches exactly how he was supposed to win. He beat all the young guys. And we'll see what the future holds for him, how he responds post-Wrestle Kingdom. But I think we've all said, God, he needs a new coat of paint. And he's just kind of doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are with you. I know a lot of people also on this Wrestle Kingdom show, they have Okada and Danielson circled as a match of a night, and it should deliver, and why wouldn't it? So that aside, what other match do you think has the chance to steal this show?
Oh, I love the junior heavyweight tag title match.
No doubt.
I love it.
What a year they've had. What a year they've had.
Yes. Oh. All right, preach.
Freaking love what they have done with Clark and Driller Maloney has been. Think about that move, right? How often has this happened? It hasn't happened in the time since I started with the company that an undersized heavyweight moves down to become a junior heavyweight and dominates as a result. Because let's not forget, he's heavyweight strong. And so now he's able to hit the big power moves. Look at that move that he hit on Kushida, the Driller Killer, and what that visual was. Holy cow. And just the violence that they brought and the fight that they brought, with Catch 2-2 being the opposite of that. TJP is beyond the most valuable in the junior heavyweight division. TJP and Desperado, for me, are the MVPs in the junior division because of how, look at the improvements of Francesco Akira and Master Wato and the solid matches that they have delivered as a result of being rubbed up with and learning from the veterans of TJP and El Desperado. It's been remarkable just to see how that division has grown with the experience that's there. But I'm really looking forward to what these juniors do. They'll tear it up.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we're in full agreement. We've been on that train for a long time. And honestly, the junior heavyweight tag scene for the entire year has been the most consistent in delivering just quality, just match and show after show. It's been a great year for them. I learned this today, and I got to throw this at you because I was kind of like, oh, I a little spot in my heart kind of – kind of clouded up. What little was left? The Tokyo Dome. Tokyo Dome. It's either a building you love or hate, right? But I learned that they're talking about demolishing it and building apartment complexes there.
I know.
So I'll ask, like, what are your fondest memories of working in that specific building?
Just seeing, you know, the joy on everyone's face the first time when they get to go there.
Yes.
And when they're walking on the floor and they're just like, oh my God, I've made it here. You know, and the fans all congregating outside when I joined you guys briefly out there, and the way that fans from all around the world would come and would treat it as like a Mecca, a post-Christmas gift to each other, to yourselves, and all of the fun times in that little area. I think that there are a lot of changes in Japanese culture, sporting culture right now. It's interesting. So the Tokyo Dome, and where I saw that the Tsukiji Fish Market, which is no more,
right,
is valuable real estate down on the water. And I think that, again, they want to put something there that is, and to have the Giants play there, because the Giants would take up the majority of those spots, majority of those dates. I think that's fine if that's the direction that they want to go. But I saw that Korakuen might also be, who knows what the future of Korakuen is and what the JRA is going to do with that building, you know, because they own the building, and I guess Korakuen is separate, but whatever. Who knows? There's a lot of changes that are happening. Jingu Stadium, where they had, you know, the summer struggle a few years ago, they wanted to knock that all down. It's one of the oldest stadiums. They wanted to knock that down, but it's in like this, of course, a valuable area. It's all of Tokyo's valuable. But fans are like, no, there's trees here that we want to. You're going to knock down all these trees too, just to put up office buildings? Get bent. And so people are fighting it. And just because they want to put up more apartment complexes or they want to do this or that, well, let's wait and see. Let's see what happens. Developers want to develop, and they only get paid when they put up new buildings and they rent them out. But let's see what happens, and let's see how things go. But obviously it would be a change. And, you know, Korakuen Stadium, which was knocked down to build the Tokyo Dome, which they finished in 89. I'm sure there were people that were sad when that happened, but marveled at the new structure. And whatever they might create down on the water, down at the Tsukiji Fish Market, might be cool. But that was a big change, you know, because that all moved to Osaka. But that's a big cultural spot in Tokyo, part of the history. So yeah, there are a lot of things that could change. We'll see what happens.
Oh, it broke my heart just thinking about Korakuen.
Yeah, oh, I know.
That's a heartbreaker. Look, I got to ask, and you are so kind in coming on the show, and I know you do others who try to rip off our gimmick, but that's okay. Yeah, that's fine. Are podcasts like ours and newsletters? I mean, look, I've been an observer subscriber since the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. Are they good for the wrestling industry? Have we just become a greasy wheel, or do you think there's a value for places like us in the wrestling landscape?
I think that the audience size is overvalued, and that the audience, I'm not saying the audience reach isn't there and the potential reach is huge, but the vast, vast majority of people that might consider themselves a wrestling fan or like wrestling or whatever, don't know what these shows are and don't listen to them.
You're telling me.
And it's just, you know, it's a small audience, and the same audience listens to everything. So it is a little bit of an echo chamber. And I think that there's, you know, everybody's kind of fighting each other, trying to chew on scraps of news and information. Because let's face it, the number of outlets and the number of businesses that offer pro wrestling is smaller now than has been. And I think companies have done a good job of tightening leaks. And I know that it's been a concerted effort within AEW to minimize leaks, because we want to make sure that, you know, stories and surprises are stories and surprises. And they want to make sure that those things happen. So, but I think where your value is, as opposed to anybody else, is the analysis that you offer, second to none. And the idea that we could look back at our history and we could talk about what it was like during the All Japan Rise and how NOAH was formed. You can go back easily 40 years because you watched all the tapes and you went back in time and you saw how the foreigners would jump from one promotion to the next. And where business is now because of the things that happened and the moves that happened, how deaths have influenced, you know, and how the economy has influenced where the industry is. That's where you guys can really dig in and deliver like nobody else. And, you know, Meltzer can and those types of guys. Everybody else is Johnny come lately, so they just parrot what you guys do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Finally, somebody recognizes us, Joel. Jesus Christ. Look,
only because of Editor Dan. He's the one that turned me on to this show. You know.
I know. He's the man. He's the man. Hey, listen, have there been times, and I know the answer must be yes, when you may have been on a long flight listening to our nonsense podcast and said, yes, these guys are completely out of their skull. Give us that time.
More often than not, I will say this. When you guys have news that you haven't broken yet, but you're talking about breaking it and I don't know it,
okay,
that happens all the time. Because I'm like, what are these guys talking about? What's the scoop? What intel do they have? Because I never had any intel. So that was invariably what caught me more off guard than any thought or prediction. Some of Joel's takes were a little bit, you know, I understood. He was trapped in a another country, in another part of the world, and he may not have been thinking clearly. He was bringing children.
Don't make excuses for me. If my takes are shit, let's just call it what it is.
Well, your takes are your takes. But I think that what happens is that you get so dug in that it's hard for you to see the other side. I've always been, and that we have to look at what the potential of it is. When it makes no sense, nobody's creating an idea saying, this idea sucks, let's do it anyway. Hey, this idea sucks. No, I hate you. We're going to continue to run with it just because I'm dug in and I'm going to insist that we do this. Nobody does that. But some of your takes, Joel, are a little bit like that. Like, they're doing this on purpose to affect you and to hurt you. I just want to say.
He definitely believes that.
Yeah. Yes. The Summer Struggle Tour of 2021 was a personal attack on me.
And I know.
I won't be convinced otherwise.
I know. There have been a few wounds that are hard to heal. And I get that. I understand. Having called some of those shows, yes. But here we are, nevertheless. No, I think that, again, the idea of taking a viewpoint and having a stance is great. If all you guys do is react, then bleh. But you got to further the ball a little bit, and you got to drive the conversation. That's what gets people talking. And I'm excited for where the future holds. And I think that, again, who are the next generation of storytellers in the industry, and where can we say, you know, some of these media types at the AEW Scrum, they're not really like journalists.
Oh,
they're
my, like, God, how embarrassing. How embarrassing, yeah. Kevin, is that? Like,
come on.
And here's another thing, too. Not for nothing. Let's bring this up. So, G1 Dallas. I have to go to the bathroom. And out the door I go, and here walks in Kevin Kelly, right? And he's like, you're not going anywhere. You're going back in this room. Boom. In. Kevin Kelly's sitting there. Silence from these numbskulls. And then I was like, well, I guess I'll ask my questions. And boom, away we go. And we had like, yeah, a 10-minute conversation. And I was so embarrassed. And then they have Okada on the mic. And some numbnut decides, do you like hamburger? Well, I don't even know what it was. It was just like, come on. Can you please? This is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm with you.
Is there a lower standard across all sports media now? Like, are we seeing this in other... in the Eagles locker room in the 76ers.
No. Kevin, I just worked Flyers last weekend. And, you know, it's professionals can be night and day. Yeah.
No one asking for free pickles there?
No free pickles whatsoever. There's none to be had. So yeah, I'm we are right there with you. Totally embarrassing. Okay. Yes.
Because I think both Triple H and Tony Khan would like to hear more great questions and to be, because they're skilled enough to be able to say yay or nay, and to know how to answer them and know how to whatever. But just to have glowing fans just staring back at them, going, "Oh, everything was great."
Well, let us know when these calls come. We would love to get an email. Join that presser. That'd be more than happy to.
You imagine? Can you imagine?
Yeah, could you imagine? That'll never happen. Damon from the Super J Cast has a question. Kevin rolling his eyes like, "Oh, Jesus Christ!" all right, Joel's gonna give you two, and then we'll wrap it up. We want to value your time.
Okay.
All right. Something you just touched on there, Kevin. Having been in wrestling for so many years in various roles, do you think that there is a shelf life to one booker or one booking committee for such a long period of time? Or do you think change brings new ideas?
Change brings new ideas, but there again, are the new ideas better than the old ideas, even from somebody who may be past the prime? The idea of writing a television show is akin to the guy on Lost having to push the buttons. Or the building was, or this island was going to blow up, you know? It's a thankless job. It's madness. I don't know why anybody would ever sign up for it. But again, those people always are surrounded with new people. And yeah, there might just be one name on the, you know, on the mantle. Hey, this is so-and-so's. He's the creative director. He's the writer. He's the whatever. But the team around him changes. And I think that we've seen that. You know, that outside influences and who, especially in New Japan, I think that as the talent has changed, the ideas that have come in have changed as well. Will Ospreay has definite ideas about what he wants to do. And some of the ideas are good, just like anybody else. Some of the ideas are good and some of the ideas aren't. So it takes that right person to be able to filter the good and the not good, and have everything work within the construct of the show. Keep the big picture in mind. I think New Japan has done a very good job with that over the years. Look at the steady hand that Tomohiro Ishii has benefited from.
Yeah.
If they were changing bookers after 5-6 years, who's to say that Ishii would have had the run that he's had?
Or if he had a job.
Yeah, or a job. Somebody might not have valued him. So, hold on. I have to give my dog treats.
That's important. How is the little one? Adorable. I've seen him. I saw some pictures you posted online. Adorable.
Yeah, he's a pain in the ass. he's big boss. He's 20 pounds, and he thinks it's the Napoleon complex. That's what I thought the movie was about. Little did I know, I was disappointed. I thought it was going to be a movie about my dog. Turns out that it's about Napoleon Bonaparte. I was like, man, this sucks. God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's what I think. I think everybody has a shelf life in this industry, but you hope that the people that, you know, come around make the job more exciting and interesting.
All right, well, my last question for you, Kevin. Obviously, you've changed employers. There's someone else on your pay list now. What can you tell us now that if you told us 6 months ago, you'd have got in big trouble for, but now you think you can kind of get away with?
I don't know anything. I never know anything, and I never did. But, you know, for years, since I was going back working with WWF, I've been accused of more times than not of leaking information. And here's the thing. I never knew anything. And I would have an idea, but I didn't know what Vince McMahon or Vince Russo ultimately were going to come up with when I was there. And after Russo left, I had, you know, even less of an idea with the writers when they came in. But yet I was always being accused. Okay. And then in ROH, it was the same thing. Well, I kind of knew what was going on, but it wasn't my call. And no, I don't know anything. And I never do anything in New Japan. I don't know anything now. I call the show at AEW and I have no idea.
I mean,
you got,
look.
Got any cheeky anecdotes then?
Yeah,
any
can we give us a story? Stories? Yeah.
Mm. All right, let me think. Okay. Give me something Whatever. That you're interested in.
Who had the worst? No, I'm not going to go there because that got people in trouble. You know what? If you got nothing, you got nothing. What are you going to do?
Pre-show, post-show shenanigans? Any times where things went like completely tits up and you're sort of scrambling to try and hold it together? Anything that sticks in the memory?
I remember seeing a very naked Yo running.
Oh, okay.
Running post-show. To try to get back into the locker room after taking a shower down the hallway and then realizing that he had a small audience of us decided to give us a little shaky shake. So there you go.
All right. Nice.
And how was his direct drive?
I tipped my cap at it. I must admit, some have been rather disappointing. Living up to the conventional thought that, you know, it's on the small side. Mm. But no, Yo got a tip of the cap. Like, hell yeah. Yeah.
Good job, buddy. I'll tell you what, working Eagles locker rooms, boy, I walk out of there and I'm just ashamed to be called a man. I gotta be honest with you. Just ashamed. All right, listen, here's how we're gonna wrap this up, Kevin.
Okay.
We're gonna give you the floor.
Okay.
You can say whatever you would like to say to whomever you'd like to say, as maybe a closing goodbye, maybe a see you soon to everyone who loved what you did for New Japan Pro Wrestling and appreciated what you did. So the floor is yours, the great Kevin Kelly.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for giving me this opportunity to come back and be with you guys at least one more time. And if, I know we will not be strangers. And we can always get together and reminisce and chew the fat because I'll keep up on the product just like I've always been. Without this show and without Damon specifically, I might not have been the announcer that I have been for New Japan because he was brave enough to take me to task for not being very good on my first go-round way back in October of 2015. But that's what made me work hard and get better. So again, thank you. Thank you for that. It was one of the most important moments of my career and has given me confidence with new challenges in AEW that everything's going to work out okay. You may not be everybody's best friend right off the bat, but trust me, if I work hard and if I listen to feedback and if I'm willing to put the effort in, I know everything's going to turn out okay because I have the best interest of the product and the fans at heart. And that's always been like my thing, no matter what company I'm with. I always just want the fans to enjoy the product more, to ultimately buy the product more. And so that the idea too of seeing the growth of New Japan World and the great people that I got to work with, all the staff, you know, that were there mixing the English commentary, the Japanese commentary, having it all go out as a stream and fans being able to consume it on a live basis was remarkable to me. And those people were always great and always a lot of fun. And they didn't have, some of them spoke some English and some spoke no English at all. And it was always just fun to hang out with them. And that was always like, because I would sit there bored a lot of times, especially on the shows that I called myself. I would have nobody to talk to, and those guys kept me company. Hold on a second, guys.
Yeah, hey, no problem.
Hey, get over here. I let my dogs out. And the
who?
Sorry. I had to let the dog. Who let the dogs out?
Yeah, me. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hold on. Get over here. Get in the house. What are you doing? Oh, this little bastard.
We are not editing this, by the way.
No, keep it in. Please keep it in.
Yes.
Hey, get in the house. What are you doing? All right, there he goes. But I wish you guys could have been there with me. Or we could have somehow every once in a while, we would do like our pregame shows, and we would do them in the world room. Every once in a while, just to, hey, here's the team, and they go, hey, they would freaking sit in these chairs for hours and put these shows together. I don't know how they did it, and they'd be there night after night in the G1 tours and the Best of Super Junior tours, and oh my God, they did fantastic. And those are the people who I loved, and you know, Mima Shimoda, who was, oh, you know, sweet staff member, always there smiling and greeting me and making sure that we knew what time to get on the bus. Those are the people that I miss that are awesome. And all the fans, both in the vast majority of them, of course, in the English-speaking world, I see a lot of them at AEW shows. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for, you know, all the enjoyment the years of New Japan. That's like, oh, that's awesome. It's so great to hear you, hear from you and see you. So that's what I'm, you know, those are the people that I'm going to miss. But I know I'll have a whole new group of fans to get to know and see. Because AEW is in a transitional phase right now. You know, the company that was there to start 4 years ago now is changing. And I'm part of that change. And some people like it and some people don't like it. So as New Japan changes and AEW changes, wrestling changes, life changes, it's all, you know, it's just change and we have to roll with it. Some people don't like it. They want their wrestling to be the way their wrestling is and they don't want change. Well, life always changes and we have to be ready for those. But without the experience that I've had over the last 8 years, I wouldn't be as happy as I am today. I can tell you that. Like, I've never been happier in my life. I dealt with depression for, my God, probably my whole life. Just was undiagnosed for a long, long time. And I felt better. You know, here we are on December, recording this on December 20th, 2023. And I'm happy. And just finding, you know, joy in different things at 56 years of age. And loving, you know, the new people that I get to work with. And seeing the opportunities for them and helping them and getting to know them and to tell their stories and to get them over. But knowing at the same time that I have had this track record of success, of doing different things, and I have to be willing to go beyond any catchphrases or sound bites that I had before, that I don't want to just be an impersonator of myself. I have to be new and different and willing to grow and change and become an AEW announcer for, you know, for fans who have known me as, you know, as part of the New Japan lineup for these years. And like I said, there's a whole bunch of people who would go, what the hell is New Japan, if I told them I've worked there for the last 8 years, that are current AEW viewers. But no, just the staff and the boys and everybody's been wonderful. And Chris Charlton has been a godsend, and I love him to death. And I, again, everybody that I've had the chance to work with, all the guys who sat with me and did commentary with me, from Rocky and Gino and Don Callis and Steve Corino, you know, the guys on the regular, and then the boys who would come out after doing their matches or whatever and come and just keep me company for an hour or two. It was always a blast. It was always fun. And I'll miss the bus rides and I won't miss the flights. And, you know, again, that's it. It's not goodbye forever. It's just for now. And I'm sure I'll be back. I'd like to be a part of that show coming up in May, the big super show that the union is putting together or whatever it's called. That would be a lot of fun. Yeah. And we'll see what happens.
Kevin, from the bottom of our heart, I mean, you have been such a pleasure to talk to and a pleasure to get to know. And what you have done for a lot of people's fandom of this product that, quite honestly, maybe wouldn't give it a chance just because it was in a language that they couldn't understand. You helped tell those stories and you helped bridge that gap for so many people that have communicated that to us. And what you do behind the scenes and what you do for, you know, and again, I'll just throw it out, a guy like Walker Stewart, you know, what you do. You are, as I like to say, a good guy. And I truly appreciate what you've done. This isn't goodbye. This is We'll talk soon. But I trust me when I say this, I appreciate everything that you've done for me and this show from the bottom of my heart. So thank you for everything that you've done.
Well, thank you, my friend. And I echo those same thoughts to you guys and the amount of help that you've given me, the amount of nonsense time that we've had together and becoming friends with Booze and being able to get to know her a little bit has been fun and you know, what is it, the saying? Oh, it's the story is the friends you met along the way. But it, as tacky and as cliched as that is, it's really true. And getting to see, you know, you guys at different various events and being a part of those moments, just popping in and not wanting to ruin you guys getting to know each other and connect, but just coming in like as a value add, like, hey, it is so good to see all of you. I love you. And I'm going to go leave you alone now. That was, you know, that's part of it too. It's not just the making sure that more people get to watch New Japan and consume that product, but also get to know each other and spread the gospel of wrestling as a connective tissue that we all share, whether we're a huge fan of you know, or a newbie. If we like something, we like something, and connecting everybody together. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. Some people got thrown out. Some people got deplatformed and completely excommunicated from society. Kevin Baird utter their name on New Japan World. Give me a break. So, but no, it's always been fun, and we'll catch up soon when I've got whenever I've got stuff to talk about, or whenever you guys have time to fill and you don't know what to talk about, call me and we'll shoot the shit.
Always welcome. You are always welcome, sir. All right, Joel, wrap this puppy up.
All right. Thank you so much, Kevin. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. And to you and to all our listeners, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.